All right. So if you are here, you know who these guys are. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on intros. I want to get straight into the value that Matt and Ryan bring. But I do want to set the stage a tiny bit. So if you haven't been paying attention, Coach Now and our friends over at Golf Shot were acquired by Golf Genius. And as a result, we get to work very closely with our good friends over at Op36 because they are also a part of this family of brands and companies. Matt and Ryan have been using Coach Now for quite some time as well, in addition to their own programming. I've got the utmost respect for what they do. I think, as far as coaches that became entrepreneurs, they are just the gold standard. And that's why I wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to meet with them today. No matter what sport you're in, there's going to be a lot to learn about programming, how to run a business, how to hire people, just all the different things that come with transitioning potentially from just coaching all by yourself to then growing a big brand and a big business, which they have done an amazing job at. Why you should focus on programming versus lessons, why you should expand that programming into something that can be templated and taught by other people. We're going to cover a ton and ton today. So, but before we get too far into it, I do want to get to the origin story, guys, with what you're how you came about, but I want to give value right away. So with that, Ryan, I'm going to ask you this as we get started. If you could kind of go back into your coaching career and take the lessons that you have now and apply them to your early days. So imagine there's a brand new coach here listening. What kind of advice might you give them or your kind of former self?
I would, to get started, I would find something that somebody else has done that's been successful and use it instead of trying to create something from scratch and losing money in the first year. Like Matt and I lost money for 6 or 7 years, right? So like every Christmas to our wives, hey, it's going to be a light Christmas. We're losing money again. Took us 7 years to figure out how to make money, where there's now programs that you can use, make money right away. Like you can make money in the first 90 days. And when I say make money, like not like rich, like you're greedy, but you got to turn a profit to stay in business. So you can turn a profit with some of these programs, PGA Junior League, Op36. And for those of you that aren't in the golf industry, those are just prepackaged programs that you can use as a coach. If I had to go back to when we started or prior to that, when we were PGA members, this is a great opportunity in 2024 where people have made the Chick-fil-A, they've made the McDonald's for coaching, just using it. And the crazy thing is, the franchisor or the licensor is not trying to take an exorbitant amount of money from the coach. They actually want the coach to succeed long term. So they only take a very small percentage. I mean, Matt probably knows the percentages better than I do, but we're typically in Op36, less than 3% of what somebody makes. So that's my immediate, like, if you want to survive as a coach, see if somebody else has a prepackaged program, maybe use it as your foundational program, make some money, and then you can create your own upper level program.
I think that's fantastic advice, especially if you do have the interest of creating an Op36 like program. How better to do it than to actually participate and learn from it and offer that at your club and potentially offer other things that maybe you create and own along the way. So let's jump into the origin story because you said you lost money for a long time, you hustled, you grinded through it like we all do. Matt, do you want to take the quick and dirty 2 to 3 minute origin story for you guys?
Sure. So, Ryan and I met at Campbell University. I was a student at Campbell back in, I started in 2007. I joined their PGA Golf Management program. Started golf late in my career. I was 16, figured out, just fell in love with it, loved learning about it. And Ryan was actually the assistant director of the PGM program. So he was my teacher and helped place me on internships and really was, my mentor to make me fall in love with coaching. So him and I went on all these certifications together. We flew out to California, did the TPI certifications together. We did Golfing Machine. We did Stack and Tilt. So we did all these things to try to learn more about coaching together while we were at Campbell. I came back from my internship final internship and mentioned to Ryan, you know, we were close at the time and said, you know, I think I really want to start a junior golf academy. And literally did I know he was really planning to do the same thing at Campbell. He just had his son who was born, and we fell in love with the idea, him and I, from Dave and Greg at TPI, this idea of creating a long-term junior golf program. Yeah. And, you know, we were the two that really tried to replicate exactly what they did when we started. I mean, down to the tee, we were bugging Greg and Dave every day, and we got three kids to sign up. We tried to run it to a tee. We were trying to figure out, how do you set this thing up? How do you market it? What are the things that need to be in place? How do you show that they're improving? How do you make it fun every day? How do you know if you want to show progression, how much you test versus you teach versus you train? So by using the TPI program and starting there, they gave us a perfect kind of like starting point, jumping off point to figure out, you know, really dig in and try to figure out, well, what are those pieces that are missing? How can we improve upon this? And so we did that for 3 to 4 years of literally just coaching the same students over and over again. Worked our way up to 80 players coming once a week for 8 months out of the year. We were making, you know, over $10,000 a month, coaching about 8 to 10 hours a week. So we were doing, you know, fairly well from a revenue perspective. And, you know, we just kept pouring the money back into the program to try and make it better. As Ryan said, we were losing money because we just kept pouring it back in. Hey, we think we could do this, or we think we could do this. And we ended up building our, making a decision that, hey, it's time to go build our own technology. Cause we had a lot of coaches reaching out to us in 2015 to license the program at that time, and, saying, hey, we'd like to use what you guys are building. And, we kind of took the leap and, decided to essentially put about 50K that we earned through the program, investing and starting, investing into the first product and technology, and then have just been steadily trying to figure it out from there and licensing it to coaches. And you know, come full circle, the last 7 years is when we actually started licensing. 7 or 8 years, we're up to 800 program locations that use the program. Wow. And you know, we were acquired by Golf Genius 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, and have the still doing exactly what we, you know, set out to do, continuously making this better. We have more resources to do it now. And so that's kind of like the, you know, without going into the details of the program itself, that's really what we've been doing together for the last 14 years now, which is hard to say out loud.
I know, I've been doing this since 2012. So just about the same length as you guys. Yeah, it's been a grind. I think some questions that come to mind, because you guys talk to coaches, we talk to coaches every single day. One of the biggest challenges is for someone that is just doing traditional lessons to move out of that model because they're nervous about adjusting. They may already fully understand that that's the way to go, but they're nervous that their existing clientele won't do it, and or they're afraid that if they kind of cut back a little bit to then invest in other areas of their business, it's not going to work out. So for you, Ryan, as you and Matt were transitioning from traditional coaching to then trying to build out these junior models, then reinvesting all the money and growing and growing and growing, can you kind of talk us through your ability to kind of pass through that fear? Because obviously there's nerves and fear. We all had it, but the true entrepreneurs are the ones that can just push through it. So I'm just kind of curious about that journey for you guys. And Ryan, if you could speak to pushing through the fear and just making it happen.
In full transparency, we did not have a full private lesson book when we started to then transition over to small group coaching.
So, but even as you said, though, you're reinvesting capital, like you made a lot of tough decisions and scary decisions along the way.
And we've also watched, Spencer, 1,200, now 1,400 coaches.
Yeah.
Through that same process,
we've held
their hand through it. So we've seen what works and what doesn't. I just want to say that we didn't have a full private lesson book.
Yeah.
The reason that one of the main reasons we started back, it was right after the real estate recession, was the university golf course, 36 holes. The president came in and said he was going to shut down the course because there wasn't enough activity out at the golf course. And Matt was a student. I was a faculty member. Mm. And I had a child. And I was like, there is no way. If we lose this course, I lose my job. What else am I going to do as a PGA member? So then how do we get people out to the courts to use the facility, to buy a membership, to play on the golf course, where the golf course will look at us as instructors as a positive aspect of the facility. So back to the original question that you had, Spencer, on the moral spirit and making the switch. What we've seen be very successful is if somebody is pretty hard-headed, and most of us coaches are, right? We're pretty hard-headed. We're comfortable doing what we are comfortable doing, is maybe not switch your 100% lesson book or 100% of your time, do a small percentage, then take the strategy of, I'm good at private lessons. I'm going to still do private lessons, but I'm going to take the shift in the mindset to go, I'm not going to do everything myself.
Right.
I'm going to have the mindset of, I'm going to bring somebody on to help me, which is a huge shift, right? Like Matt and I have gone through this a couple of times when it was just you and, or just Matt and I, it was pretty easy. I knew that he was going to work. He knew that I was going to work, and we worked 7 days a week, 365. When we hired our first couple employees, it was really scary because you're trying to figure out, are they actually going to work? Are you paying them enough? They want vacation. Okay. That's two. I mean, that's an interesting jump to go through. We've been through that when we had our first five, then when you get 10 employees, then when we got up to 20 employees, that was a jump. But really that initial shift of going, okay, we're going to have to bring somebody on to help us. Maybe we just continue to do a private lessons, but don't do a 60-hour work week of teaching privates. Maybe you go back down to 3 hours, dedicate those other 10 hours to training somebody up to run a program. And that's what we're seeing in Op 36 now. The majority of the coaches that are coming on are not the most technical, the most experienced coaches. They're actually the second, the third assistant coach at the facility.
Got it.
That the head guy has said, this is a great way for you to get started. You're going to get 40, 50 students. Use this prepackaged program. It'll get them on the golf course. It'll break down some of the barriers on the marketing, which I would say the marketing is the hardest part on this. Matt does a great job on it. He does most of the marketing for Op 36. But how do you, when somebody comes in the door, they're ready to sign up for a private lesson. How do you share with them? Like the karate gymnastic places do a wonderful job of this. How do you share with them? Hey, here's our program. You meet every Monday with the group. Then on Saturday, you have the testing for your belts and you go through these belts from white to black. Here's a uniform. Are you ready to get started? We don't have that in the golf industry. We never have, but we've always strived to get to that point where you could communicate 30 to 35 seconds why group programming is better for them. Knowing full well as a coach on the backside, it's better to have six kids in front of you paying $50 a session than to teach a 1 hour lesson for $150. And if you duplicate that out, Matt and I did for 8 months, we had so much money coming in. It was so exciting. We're like, oh, let's spend it. Like, let's figure out a way to make this even better. And yeah, we dedicated 50 for the app, but we also spent a lot of money previously on a couple other apps that didn't work too. So we were probably 100 in at least. But we were so excited. You're young entrepreneurs and you're just excited. You're like, let's try this. And it's a mindset shift, Spencer, I think, of just going, you can't do everything yourself. Back yourself down a little bit, train somebody else up, and that can be duplicated as much as you want. And you can run those healthy programs for years.
Yeah, that's huge to because some of the programs that we run internally to coach now, these blueprint programs, a big part of that is moving beyond just yourself. That's one major milestone in the early days of someone's career, is hiring somebody or contracting somebody even. And they don't even necessarily even have to coach. It could be contracting somebody to help you with social or capture videos. You just got to bring more people into your world. Otherwise, it's going to remain relatively small. On that mindset shift side of things, because I think anybody here listening, I mean, we've taught, again, thousands of coaches. The number one thing usually is just shifting their mindset from coach to entrepreneur. And I beat that into the ground because the way that you think about things has to be different if you want your life to change. So you need to be thinking from that lens, making decisions from that lens, rather than, I just want to be the best technical golf coach or technical baseball coach I can be. That's all fine. But if you can't monetize it, then you're going to go out of business and go sell insurance like a lot of golf professionals end up doing. So if you're here, you're interested in growing a business, one of those major mindset shifts is not only hiring other people, but then it's scaling your revenue. And there's some fear attached sometimes to that as well. There's a lot of coaches that all they've ever wanted to do is make 50,000. All they've ever wanted to do is make 100,000. You guys have gone through all of that, not only as coaches, but now that you've built a substantial business, now the scale's really there. Matt, just kind of curious, along the way, these certain milestones from a revenue standpoint, was there some nerves attached to that? Were there maybe some imposter syndrome stuff? Or was it just happening? You guys were riding the wave. I'm just kind of curious the experience of hitting these different big targets.
No, I think, you know, some of the reasons folks shy away from making a change is the fear of kind of the unknown of what's going to happen. Yeah. But you just have to get what I would say is like, and we, you know, we're still teaching every new Op36 program that comes in. You know, they come in, they're usually like kind of excited about it. What are they going to do? How we get, but we always tell them like to start the same, right? It's like, start with one program, very small. Let's figure this out together. Let's see how, you know, you're going to learn everything, the ins and outs. And then from there, have your plan in place ahead of time of how you're going to scale it up. So like, you know, we always say, hey, start with one class, 6 students, fill that class, start a wait list, right? Boom. And then anyone who's on that wait list, tell them you will open another class and scale it up. So I think sometimes people are actually feared of like, what happens if this really takes off? Like they're
looking too far into the future and being paralyzed in the present. Yeah.
But it's good to have that plan to go like, okay, I have my plan. Does the revenue make sense? Like so many folks, I think, get themselves, they don't think 2 steps ahead to go, okay, well, you know, I booked this private lesson and now I did I sold 10 5 lesson packs. And now you're like, oh gosh, and now I got to fulfill these 10 5 lesson packs. And how do I make that work? Where it's like, okay, set up and think ahead of time. Okay, if I open this class and I know I'm making $180 an hour versus my 1 hour private lesson.
Yeah.
I know that's pre-booked for the next 8 to 16 weeks because I'm, you know, that's how I set the program up. Beautiful. Okay, well, I can always dedicate that 1 hour time on Monday. And now I don't have to worry about all these other bookings, right? And then you go, yeah, well, when can I open the next one? And when can I open the next one? And when can I open the next one? So from a programming perspective, like that's, you know, you start at the coach's level, right? First is like your program. If your program's not scalable, then if the goal is to like package this up and sell it to another coach to use, it's not going to be scalable for them, right? It should be saving you time and really maximizing time efficiency and your dollar per hour. But it really comes back to do that, you have to have a great product and great program in place that people actually want to sign up for. They understand, they'll commit to, they'll retain. And that stuff just takes a long time to figure out. And you actually have to be boots on the ground doing it. You have to commit to your own model and think forward on that. So, but yeah, it's just kind of this iterative thing. If I think back to like, the funny thing I always think about, I think about this a lot. We have been working on trying to improve the model, the framework, the marketing.
Totally.
It's like you're doing the same thing over and over again. It's not like you build it and it's done. It's like, how do we make it better? Oh, what if we made the product better? How do we save ourselves more time? How do we make it more engaging for the consumer? How do you make it, you know, it's just this ongoing cycle. It's like, oh, that's not very clear. Like if it's not clear, people won't sign up. We need to make that clear. You just continue. We've been doing that for 14 years on the same program. It looks simple on the surface because it took a long time to make it look. It did not used to look simple. 10 levels, 40 skills, booklets that had no commonality. Like all these things were so complex because we thought we had to do so many. And then I think as you start to weed out the things and get in like, this is what really works. And you figure out it's actually really, you have like a little model or framework at the end that helps you like understand how to like scale it up. But at first you kind of throw everything at the wall. And that's what we spent the first 5 years doing and coaching every day, right? Like actually boots on the ground coaching. But we kind of always had like, how do you scale this up in the back of our head? You know? So it's not like we wanted to selfishly, I think, Ryan, like when I look back, I was thinking, how do I make this? How do I take what we do, systemize it for me to go run my own academy one day? Right. And I think we never really set out to say, we're going to do this forever together. Right. It was like, how do we systemize this so it'll work for me? And really TPI was like, if you think about it, TPI kind of helped a lot of people try to systemize something already. They just weren't actually running the program, boots on the ground, running it every day and really proving it out. Right. So, but anyway, if that, to come back to your question, I think it's just going to be this iterative process that happens, but you should start with the end in mind of like, okay, well, what business model do I want to lean into that's going to maximize my time? But also, I think in any program in any sport, you need, the consumer needs to know that it takes time to become good at something. So,
right.
You know, you should be built leaning into that. And golf is built on drop-in clinics and camps that are all short term, yet it's the lifelong sport. It's like the one sport we should be okay with knowing it's going to take forever. You got to come consistently, but they don't. Every other sport's much better in it than us. But yeah, I would say start with the end in mind.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, good wisdom there on somebody that's been through it. There's the iterative approach, right? We still are figuring stuff out at Coach Now every day. I think any entrepreneur is doing the same. You don't usually build it and have it work forever. You got to adjust with the times and especially technology. So let's talk, Ryan, about the gamification of practice and programming and try to, if you can, try to blanket it as an any sport program. You can speak obviously about how you guys have done it, but if there's any tips that you can provide for anybody here that might be in fitness or baseball and they're just out there grinding, doing group classes or doing the one-on-one training, what kind of things do they want to be looking out for if they're going to be trying to create their own programming and gamify it, get it sticky, keep people coming back?
Sure. And I would also, those that are on the call as well, we go into pretty big detail on this in our book, How to Create a Junior Golfer. It's on Amazon. I think it's $10. We have two or three chapters dedicated to this exact piece.
Because perfect.
We came to the realization in, must have been 2015 or 16, that there's two objectives as a coach that you're trying to fulfill. And we were very good at fulfilling the short-term objective of making that class fun. So Matt and I did a great job in those first 4 or 5 years of, if you came out and watched us, it was like a circus. Like we were having right? Like we were throwing footballs, left hand, right hand, 1 foot, 2 feet. We were playing music. We were had balloons. I mean, these kids, they were so excited to come down to our little area at the golf course. They were so pumped. And I know in class that day when they were in school, they were just so pumped to come to class. The challenge was we did that over and over and over and over again for 5 years with those 80 kids. They came once a week for 8 months out of the year. Fun changes. Glenn Kundari says this out of Canada, fun changes, right? An 8-year-old's fun is different than a 12-year-old's fun is different than a 10-year-old's fun is different than a 16-year-old's fun. But we weren't fast enough to adapt the fun. We just kept doing the same fun over and over again without understanding that there needs to be a macro picture of why they're coming to the course every day.
Right.
We never did a great job of that in the first 5 years. So we had to retool after we lost 40 of our players to not only gamifying the short term, the class, making it a blast through different games and strategies. And we've read tons of books on that stuff and we know enough about it to make the short term fun, but we had to retool and figure out, okay, one, we were not actually making them competent golfers. We were only folks that had fun. So we had to solve that issue. And number two, the kids, when they were coming to class, had no idea why they kept coming every week. They were getting confused. They were asking us after 4 years, Coach, why do I keep coming down and having fun each week? Like, why am I doing this? So we had to tie those two together and get them on the golf course, actually play. And then I think Matt might agree with this. I would say our best decision was changing our name.
What was it previously?
We were North Carolina Long-Term Athlete Development was our first name.
Okay. Yeah.
First $800 check. The gentleman couldn't fit the whole thing on the check. And we're like, oh, that wasn't a great name. Then we went to the Edge Junior Golf Programs, then iGrow Golf. And then we went to Op 36 when we really wanted to make sure that when somebody saw the name, they immediately know that it was about playing golf. And it had like a military theme operation to it. What is Op 36? We get the question in the airport all the time. And in 10 seconds, we can nail it and tell them that, hey, we start close to the hole, move back. Every hole is a par four. Play 9 holes, you try to beat 36. And then you just back up as you get better. And immediately that started to change the mindsets of the players. Yeah. Instead of, I'm just coming to listen to Kenny Chesney today and watch Matt having a great time, to, oh, on Saturday, I got to play in a 9-hole event. And I got to play from 25 yards away and I got to figure out a way to get it in the hole. And they finally tied what they did every week to what they were trying to do on the course. And then when we made 10 levels all the way back to the back tees, so level one is 25 yards. You get all these levels in between. Level 10 is the back tees at your course. You could see the kids going, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
I beat level one. I get to go to level two. And if Charlie, my friend, beats level one before me, he's ahead of me.
Right.
And we finally tied in the karate belts. That it's just such a powerful system, the karate belts. I don't think any of us really understand how powerful that is. When you see another kid go to the yellow belt and he goes to the Tuesday class now, and you have to stay in the Monday class, I mean, you're heartbroken.
Right.
So then, oh, I got to move. I got to figure out my hand stuff so I can, my punches and kicks so I can move to Tuesday. We finally tapped into that. And then we tied the short-term gamification with the long-term gamification. And then after $100,000 of money on apps that don't work, we finally figured out how to get an app to work. We tied, tied the digital to it, added a curriculum and lesson plan. So coaches that didn't know what they were doing in a two-day training with us now can figure out how to do it. And it took off. But like Matt keeps saying, like, it takes time to figure this stuff out. Like, we didn't do this 5 years. We were fumbling. We didn't do it in the first 10. I would say in the last year and a half to 2 years, we finally figured out the recipe that works best. On that. So, yeah, we can dive into short-term gamification if you want, Spencer, like how to make the first class fun and every class after that. But you really got to tie in, like, if you're a skier and the goal is to be able to get down a black diamond, like, does the kid know? Or to be an Olympian, I don't really know skiing that well, but another sport, like what is the long-term reason that you're there? You might not need it when they're six or seven or eight, but at some point as a coach, you got to be ready to sit the parents down and the kid down and say, Spencer, this is what you could achieve if you wanted to sport of Nordic skiing or something. And we just kept swinging and missing on that.
Well, there's so much to tease out of there. I'm going to try to recap it a little bit, what stands out to me. One, there is a lot in a name, because if that name can spell out what you're doing and it really speaks to the niche that you've created, that's massive. So I think the name's killer. And there's obviously a lot of stuff happening in the background that we all know about that is even furthering how much people really enjoy that name and how important it is. The other is you started with fun, you evolved into the more of a long-term mindset. And yes, they all need to marry together. That's absolutely true. What came across, and I already knew this, and most people listening know that your start was in juniors, but I think let's take a quick second and recognize that all beginners are starting to benefit from your program. So I would encourage any coach listening here to recognize, hey, juniors is a great place to start. As my old friend Jeff Trosh, who's a mental trainer, said, junior sports are recession proof, especially if you're a high performance coach. Parents will always spend money for their kids to do something. So just encourage you to start with juniors if you're not, but recognize if you create the right template, the right program, often what works for juniors can work with any beginner. And there's a lot of opportunity in becoming that beginner pathway. Golf's hard to learn, surfing's hard to learn, skiing's hard to learn. Not all sports are lifelong sports, so you need to recognize where the opportunities are. I mean, if you're a baseball or softball coach, you're probably not working with a lot of adults, so juniors are where you need to spend your time. But if you do work in a sport that has a larger demographic, really consider this programming as a way to service everyone. So I know that's happening for you guys. I also know that your business model is evolving. That stuff always changes. I'm not going to ask you to talk about it, but I just want to mention it for everybody here that even now, you guys are trying to refine business models and the offer and the program, like we all are. So everybody listening, you're never going to have it figured out. Just keep learning and keep adjusting because new information comes. Matt, I want to ask you this because this is a question I had, and it's a question that we actually had come in through our little form that we sent out yesterday to everybody. Mm-hmm. I live in an area that's crazy busy on public golf courses. Mm-hmm. I live in LA. It's brutal. Arizona is the same. Other parts of the country are the same. Where during the top season, it's really difficult to get anybody on the course, let alone a potential program like yours. So I'm curious, just for me, how do you help coaches navigate that obstacle? How do they maybe sell it to the course to where the course opens up a little bit for them?
Yeah,
I think anybody here, no matter the sport, you're going to run into barriers for programming. So just kind of curious how you guys have negotiated it, how you've been creative to maybe adapt it.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome question. And it's coming up, obviously, since COVID, a lot more in golf. The biggest thing is to like think about what would happen if you didn't have the program and that person was going to participate in your program on their own. if they were going to do that, they were going to just go pay for that tea time anyway, right?
Right.
If it's an $80 tea time at 5 p.m., they're going to go do that anyway, right? What you're doing is you're giving them the opportunity to put that on the calendar, book it out for them, right? And the program is getting them to show up. Just like in a weight loss class, you know, they could go exercise on their own. They can go do whatever else, but you're putting it on the calendar for them. There's immense value in just doing that. People will sign up just for that to say, I have an excuse, right? I signed up for this thing. I have an excuse. That's why long-term programming works. So what we help coaches do is, yes, you have an LA club. It's really busy. There's never a club though that we have found that doesn't have one available tee times. And there's never a general manager that is not okay. Like never not okay going, hey, we're going to start this program. We need the lowest time. We're happy to pay for tee times. We will build that tee time cost into the price. So yeah. A lot of folks are under this perception that, you know, if you want to create a really good program, you have to look at every stakeholder and create a win-win-win. We needed the golf facility. So the golf facility says, look, we also need to get our players on the course for the program. What do you want? What can we do?
Yeah.
And you're essentially going to, let's say it's $100 tee time just for, you know,
yeah,
just to kind of put that out there. It's $100 to play a course in LA. Well, great. You're going to package that into your program price. And when you say, look, yeah, there's 4 9 hole events you play in. If you were going to do that anyway, it's going to cost $100 to do it on your own. So you're just, yeah. you're typically though, when you're building it out and you're scheduling it out, you're going to be able to negotiate a little bit better rate for your players. But you should also add a little bit of a premium for you running that, right? Like in the golf world, golf pros, like one of the secret sauces of Op36 is we're helping golf pros who run these events make money running the event. You know, get 30 people to show up and it's $30, you know, the course is charging you $20 for a 9 holes and on a late evening. You know, if you charge $30 a session, you got 30 kids, you just made $300 for the 2 hours you were out there running it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's about, you know, when things are busy, you it's not that you're asking for free tee times. We help people package that into their program price and explain and market it in a different way. But we hear that quite a bit, you know, that tee times are early, you know, or busy. But it's nothing you can't get around. I think the misconception though, is that you all of a sudden are never going to be able to get a time. That's not the case. You could literally go on right now and book it, you know? So if you can book it for whatever it is, then you can build the program, you can book the time and you're good to go.
100%. I think there's a lot there as well. And the negotiation side of things. I remember when I was coaching, I went to a brand new facility. I just moved back to the area. I had coached these academies, you know, I had kind of a good history as a player and a coach. But this particular facility had never had anybody that was an independent coach. They just had their assistant pros teaching for $20 or $30 an hour. And I came in saying, I'm going to charge at least $150. But here's what else I'm going to do. I'm going to create events that you guys have never had. I'm going to partner with local businesses and bring them in and be their coach, right? I'm going to run a junior program that you currently don't have. So we're going to get more people on the golf course, more people spending money in the F&B, more people buying range balls because they're going to practice now that they're working with a coach. And to their credit, they're like, yeah, this sounds great. Just do whatever you want. You know, just cut us in on a little bit here and there. But because there was so much money coming in the other channels of the club, that GM was spot on recognizing the more people here, the more money is going to be generated just for the club in general. It's not all about tee times. Right. So I think you guys acting as advisors to these up and coming coaches that have these fears, these worries, or because you have a lot of people not knowing how to negotiate or present an offer at all to a club. And clearly you guys are helping them do that, which is absolutely massive.
It's been helpful that we do that. Ryan leads that with 7 academies that we run ourselves still, you know? And so Ryan, you've faced the tee time thing here recently, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The tee time thing. And then also when Spencer was talking, like not only the initial negotiation, Spencer, but how do you stay there? Right.
Right.
We don't want to get in the door. Like every 6 months, we're sending in a facility impact report to the GM that says
smart.
This many rounds of, and it comes right from our software, the app. Everything is in the app. I only have to click at each one of our 7 locations, just the year, the students, and it pumps it out and it shows the GM how many rounds have come in.
Beautiful.
revenue has come in based on PGA averages of every time somebody comes to the facility, how much they spend on a round, food and beverage, merchandise. And the GM looks at that. They look at the list. If you're at a private club, we're at a couple of private clubs, and we give them the list. Every time we give it to them, they look on the back because it has every person that participated in the back. It's like 300, whatever the number is. The GM goes through. I didn't know Mrs. Smith's family participated. Right. Didn't know Mr. Dennis's family participated in your program. And we're like, yeah, there's 290 families of your 500 members, 290
Crazy.
Participate in the Op 36 program. And it's not that the GM doesn't care to know this stuff. They're just not aware. They got so many hats they're wearing. So when you go in and say, GM, Mr. Smith, I just want to drop this off. We really enjoy being here. We enjoy paying you our revenue share every month. We're okay doing that. Just wanted to show you what impact we're having in case your boss asks you, we're here, just give them this report. And it's not just getting in the door now. It's trying to figure out how can you stay there 10 years? How can you stay there 15 years? Which is not easy. Like if you don't have stuff to give them, like if you're just, we're in a digital age, everybody wants to see something. Like if you just go in and talk for 10 minutes, they could care less. They're not even gonna listen to you. But if you have something physical to give them and they can look at the stats and go, wow, you're 80% ladies in your program. I had no idea. I thought it was just a program. No, Mr.
Yep.
Predominantly ladies here at your club.
Yeah, that's huge because you hear in all of the coaching and teaching industries that we touch, because as you know, we're not just golf, we're 60 plus sports now. The turnover is ridiculous at every facility, every academy, whether they're firing people or literally just going out of business. A lot of those boils down to, I don't have a facility to do what I need to do. So in golf, you have more and more coaches actually just going out and renting their own space at an industrial warehouse so they can control their life, fully on board with it. But there's magic to having access to the golf course, and that's where people are because you're immediately going to get clientele if they just see you there, which is another kind of hidden benefit. So I think what you're saying is projecting out to the future and making sure that as you're creating relationships, you're establishing clear benchmarks on where the rates may or may not go, right? Maybe if you make more money, the rate that you pay the club might actually go down in some cases if you can negotiate it correctly, not the other way around. My parents own restaurants, and so they've been in these buildings for 35 something years, and they got to renegotiate every 10 years, right? So they have these 10-year leases. So I'm encouraging all of you, as you're listening to this, if you're happy at the place that you're at, try to create compelling offers and agreements with these facilities so one day you don't wake up and just don't have a place to do what you're doing. Right. Now, sadly, agreements are only as strong as the lawyers that enforce them. So, as I've come to learn many times running a technology company, but I think it's still good advice nonetheless. And especially if you have a brand like Op 36, if you're a golf coach standing behind you, there's a lot of power, I think, in that community, knowing what's going to work. I want to take a quick tangent. Just for my own benefit, this might go a little over the heads of our participants, but there are a lot of folks out there that have dreams of not only creating programming, but launching some sort of other business. A lot of people want to build technology companies. I tell all the coaches, please don't. I did it for you, so don't go do it. You guys went ahead and did it. I never got to have that conversation with you. I think it was wise that you did it because our businesses are so different. But way too many people come my way and want to build a coaching app, and then they go and spend all their money and think, oh, it's only going to cost me $50,000 one time. This group in India said they'd build it for me, and then I'm all done. And I have to continue to tell people that's not how any of this works. So Matt, I'll maybe pass this to you for a couple minutes, then we'll jump into the questions from the group. But you decided to build an app. It didn't go well for the first couple times. It never does. It's still a struggle. Maybe just talk us through the immediate point where you guys recognize, wait, we should do this. And then maybe talk about some of the growing pains and some of the lessons learned that maybe can be passed on to people that actually, you know, are interested in something like this.
Sure. So I think, you know, to start with the end of mine here, or go all the way to the punchline is, you know, when you're building when you build a piece of technology, you're essentially having a child. You know, it's like it doesn't go away, right? It's not something that you build and it's done. I actually thought that, and I'm glad I thought that. And
yeah, I wouldn't have started if I didn't know what if I knew what I knew now, I would never have started.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. But the part of this is like you, that's a part of it, right? You would have never, yes. If you actually knew it and believed in it, you would have never done it. And you probably heard a bunch of people tell you like, don't do it. And then you still,
Like, nah, I could figure this out. Don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Very similar. But it, you know, thinking back to when we first started, to be honest with you, I kind of, we were booklets. Everything started like very manual thing, booklets, bag tags, programming levels. Everything was like very, we got that feeling like, oh gosh, well, if we're going to scale this, like how do you make this scalable? And then we started looking like, well, ours was like such a custom program. There was no technology to actually make that happen. It's
right.
Like, well, we do this, but we kind of had this vision of, we want to be able to track play and practice and all these other things and gamify. We did have that vision because we've been studying gamification in the day-to-day programming, right?
Right.
So, but when that leap of, I still remember kind of convincing Ryan that, hey, we actually, I'll tell you our biggest failure. It hurt. I was living with Ryan at the time, my wife and I, for free upstairs in their pretty, you know, like the finished attic, which was, I still am very grateful for, Ryan. And
not a heater or an air conditioner up there.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, was doing all this research on how to build an app. Cause we're like, how do we digitize this? And, got connected to a Salesforce, integration developer. And they sold us on the fact that we could build all this in Salesforce. And I didn't really do all my homework. It was our first endeavor. And we spent $20,000 building an app or just like customizing Salesforce to realize, like, wait, every time we open another location or help another coach, we have to pay $500 or something to add another license. It's like, well, we have to charge like $1,000 for license just to make $500. And it's like, no one's going to pay that. And it was hard to tell Ryan, like, hey, you know, we invested all this time and energy and $20,000.
Yeah.
I think it's the wrong decision. It's not the right path to go down. And then the next endeavor was, okay, instead of us building something, let's find, one day my wife came home and there was an app that it had all the gamification mechanics we were thinking about and some of the content. And it was just like, I think if we sold this guy on our stuff in his app, maybe he'd white label it for us. And my wife opened the door to a developer that did that. And I won't name the company, but it was, we ended up using it. And then I realized, man, there's things I really want to do in this that I just cannot. Yeah. I just cannot. It's not. And then I started to, it was like starting to become very apparent. And our first app, and that was the hardest part for us, like our first app was this app. There's probably millions of dollars invested in this amazing mobile app, and it worked so well. And so we just think, oh yeah, there's this app. We can go rebuild this. So we went to rebuild it and decided to part ways with this company. And we had we made the decision and we had 4 months, we chose a company to build the first version of our mobile app and web app. And it was 4 months until we had to launch it with our coaches and did not know how long software took to build or any of that. And it was an MVP company that we used and you don't know who you're using, right? I mean, it was those parts in your company where you go, it's over. I remember that vividly. I was up in Nishata Country Club in Boston when we launched, doing a presentation on gamification. And I'm getting texts and emails of like, everyone's upset. The app doesn't work. Nothing's working. Like, this is an absolute botched launch. It was the most stressful, like 3 to 4 months of my life trying to navigate through it. So, you know, Ryan's standing right there with me the whole step of the way. It was hard. We were taking punches left and right. We had about 100 coaches at the time that we promised this thing and we didn't deliver. But the good thing is the books and the bag tags and the program we built works. It really works. So like we still have a bag tag. We had all these things, all that stuff still worked. And since then, really, we've just been trying to learn how to make this thing better, there's so many layers. You have like, if people understood, like my job every week is like overseeing the technology, because starting back then, I kind of oversaw it then. And Ryan trusted me to do that. I am looking at 20 hours a week, and we're looking at designs and feedback every day for the next features, and we're problem solving bugs every day. So like when you get into technology, you need a bigger team. You need it. Like I have a team of 7 developers now, a product manager. And then we have our team that's fielding bugs. Like it's an ecosystem. So starting a tech company is like, if you can get so much farther using Coach Now, and Coach Now is building to help you do that, right? Like it's a platform that's not like Op36 is a pretty specific program, right? Like you're signing up to use this program. The consumers get an Op36 experience. Like you can't, there's not like a lot of customization you can do in there as a coach. We're going to build some tools, but Coach Now is your platform. You know, you're building a platform to go, how can I help other people build programs without having to become a technology company? And yeah. Trust me, you do not want to be like, unless you are going to figure out how to do it and get like, it's crazy that we even made it to where we are today. Like when looking back at it, I mean, Ryan, you would probably agree with me on that, right? It's just like, and I would have never thought that, you know, 40 hours a week, pretty much in my life. I love it. Like we have to have someone who loves it and can lead it. Right. It's like, I love it, but that's our life now. Right. Like I'm not a golf pro anymore. It's like product manager, technology leader. Right. So, but Ryan, anything to add to that?
The only thing I would say is if you mapped out like where we've been from and where we are now, it's just like serendipitous. Some of the things that happen, right? We lose $20,000 on the first app, but we have money coming in every month of $10,000, so we survive, right?
Yeah.
If we didn't have the $10,000 coming in, we're deep six. Nobody hears about Op36 ever. After we get done with that one, we go to this other guy and we use his skin. The one thing to add to Matt's story a little bit that should help is that the departing meeting with that gentleman, very nice guy, we asked him, we said, hey, will you build these things for us? We're happy to give you whatever the number was, 70% of our revenue. Like we're going to give him the whole thing. And he's like, nah, I just don't want to change what I'm currently doing. That was the best thing that could ever happen to us. We would have there if he said yes. So then we're walking out of that meeting in Raleigh, North Carolina, just like kicking the stones on the side of the road going, what the heck are we going to do now? And then we jump in our car, we drive down to Buies Creek, and we're like, all right, let's try to do this on our own. So like all these things, and then coming, figuring out how to use the app. I mean, there's so many, like that story, it's not fun when your entire customer base is sending you messages about how bad your app is. Like everything stops. You stop working out, you stop talking to your wife, you stop spending time with your kids, stop doing all these things. Why? Because you have to service your 100 customers that have no clue because everything's falling apart when you could just potentially partner with somebody who's got an app.
Yeah.
Taking on the stress of all the updates. It's not only the iOS, it's not only the Android, but it's also the web app. I mean, there's so many moving parts to this. You just got to figure out what you want to do. And if you enjoy coaching, you might want to partner with somebody who's got an app already so you can continue to coach and you don't have to turn into a tech company potentially. But
We service all these academies that come our way and they go, oh, we want to white label it. We want to do this. And we go, well, just be careful. If you start asking these questions, you're going to become a tech company. Like we can give it to you, but you're going to have to service everything, service your clientele. Like we'll give you the code base, but now you're a tech company. Do you really want to do that?
What fixes everything?
No, I don't want to do that. Right. I wanted to talk about that because I think no matter who's on the call today, the entrepreneurial journey is an absolute grind. Is it worth it? Depends on who you are. There's a lot of risk-averse people here. You want to make sure that you're making the right decisions for you and your family. But if you are going to be taking that leap from a lot of you doing lessons or private training today to moving into programming, to moving into hiring people, to moving into programs that you can systematically have other coaches deliver, and then you need to support those coaches with technology. Like you guys didn't start with, hey, let's build an app. You went through all of those stages and you are where you are today because of all that iteration, that grind, that hustle. So I wanted to dive into that for a moment because I think all of you here need to understand what it takes to get to the level that Matt and Ryan have achieved. Because a lot of it is just the glitz and glamour of Operation 36 with all these facilities, but they don't necessarily know how the heck you built a multi-million dollar business. It's not like one day you started and there it was. It's been a long journey, a long process. And now we're fortunate that we're going to be able to do work together here moving forward to help more coaches and grow our businesses. But I want to field a few questions here So we've got some folks still here with us. I want to make sure that if you do have questions, you can ask them. We do have the Q&A. So please go ahead and use that box here. We got another 10 minutes and then we're going to jump. But one question that did come in regards to your engagement with the youth athletes. We spoke about how you evolved into the programs that you have today. One question is, what do you think is the biggest draw? Is it the leaderboards? Is it any the progress that you're helping people navigate, the camaraderie? What do you think is the biggest kind of sticky factor? If you had to choose one, and your answers might be different from one another, but is there one kind of serious sticky engagement factor that you think not only works for you guys, but maybe could work for programs and other sports? I'll leave that to you, Ryan, to jump in first, and then Matt, if you disagree, you can chop them down.
Yeah, I mean, the great quote that we go back to all the time when we're doing app stuff or we're doing program stuff is progress is the strongest form of motivation.
Okay.
So we always look at that, right? Like if you're trying to lose weight, when you lose a pound, you're excited. The next five are easier and the next 10 are easier. You got to have some sort of progress. But then the other thing that Matt and I learned early on is even though the youth athlete sees progress, how are you going to communicate to the parents on a consistent basis of making progress?
Because the kid's certainly not.
Right. So the beauty of our app now is that when a player goes out and they play nine holes, and let's say they, our big thing now is you got to get one stroke better. So if somebody goes out and they shoot a 48, the goal is not to shoot 36 the next time. The goal is to shoot 47. So what can you and your coach problem solve to get one stroke better? And when you do, when you shoot the 47 and the coach logs it in the app, immediately the dad who's in California or he's in Alberta, Canada on a trip, he's sitting at home, he gets a notification that his son has gotten one stroke better. So when he talks to him that night, he says, "Hey, John, I saw that you got one stroke better. I'm so proud of you."
Yeah.
Like, be able to tie those together with the coach, the student, and the parent is so satisfying for us to be able to report on, because we've never been able to do that in the past when we used to use spreadsheets, we used to use through reminders. And the challenge is the student is sometimes all the time short-term memory. So they don't remember last Sunday that they improved by a stroke. They just remember that they chunked the chip on Friday.
Yeah.
So then you've got to figure out, how do you constantly remind the student that they've gotten one stroke better? And that's where we use the app on a continuous basis to communicate the progress. Because that's when we dive down to all of our gamification stuff, it's how do you show progress? People are addicted to progress.
I think that's a perfect answer. That's one of our major tenets here and why we built the platform the way we did, is because it was really difficult to visualize progress now, and especially across multiple sports, which we're trying to service. And typically that's going to be through video, right? It's going to be through the results that you get with some statistics, of course. But our platform, I think, is more about kind of the video and the look how far I've come from one to the next kind of progress.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for that particular question from Rob, how are you tracking and showing and highlighting progress is probably the most important thing to highlight or to focus on with any of these programs that you're building. So as we get close to wrapping up, because there's so much more that we could talk about, and we're not seeing a bunch of fired questions, and so clearly we're asking and answering together. What would you say that we haven't covered that I think is that you would think is important, Matt? Like, what have we missed? Because we've clearly missed a bunch, but what stands out to you?
Yeah. Well, I think about if you're going to build a program, if I look back at day one journey and I said, what are the most important things? I think, as Ryan just hit on, if you go study gamification and what they do, because they're unbelievable at making people buy into a big message marketing. And like, if you're going to run a weight loss program, then make it tangible, right? Like, let lose 10, right? That's why it's called Operation 36. Like, from a marketing perspective, I what I hate in the golf industry is someone said, we have a wonderful junior program. It's called the something junior program. And it's like, well, how does it work? And it's like, well, we have camps and drop-in clinics. And it's like, well, what's the purpose of it? And it's like, there's no tangible. Yes. So there's a reason we're called Operation 36. And the next message is, you know, our goal is to take you from never playing golf to being able to shoot 36 or better for nine holes from a full tee box. So it's like that quick marketing message took 7 years to come, you know, it took forever.
Yep.
but start with the end in mind, make it, you know, have like a clear goal, and then come back and set these proximal goals. And then inside of those goals, there's going to be education that you're going to have to give to give them, get them better and get them through it. I think it's okay. It's actually, it would be much better for you to have just an introduction program that says like, we're going to get you to this step. And then package that up and make it tangible, like whatever that is, because, and then from there, all these ideas on the micro level, the classes you do, like how can you motivate someone inside of a class, right? All those gamification. Octalysis is the book that sticks out to me. That's probably one of the biggest impacts on our gamification and game mechanics.
Okay.
And it helps you understand, like, and I think if you look up self-determination theory, that's another really good one. As Ryan just went through, mastery, competence. These are the things that intrinsically motivate us, because that's honestly what you're trying to do. You're trying to extrinsically motivate someone using points and badges and leaderboards and community,
yep,
and all these different things, is really just to get them to a point that their skill level gets good enough that the mastery and competence takes over, where the intrinsic motivation is there to want to just pursue that, right? So I'm just rapid firing ideas here, but I would think that would be my biggest, start with a very tangible end goal. If you're going to go build a program, think about what that is, right? What's that end result? And it wasn't until we really stumbled upon, Ryan and I always knew in our program, which was interesting, it was iGrowGolf. It was start to scratch in six levels. We were trying to get someone to shoot par for nine holes. Like, that was it. We were doing that the whole time. iGrowGolf didn't really encompass that, right? Like, the stuff didn't. And then it wasn't until we figured out, like, we should just set the actual shoot par close back up. And that whole, everyone's talked about that, but no one's ever like put it in practice. And it took us forever to do it. And there's so many other things that added up that why that made sense, right? Like, from pace of play and everything. But
totally.
Then once you have that in place, you work backwards from there and go, well, if that's the tangible thing, how do we chunk it down and make it even more achievable? Package that up, make that the program. And what people are going to do is they're going to see success. Maybe it's lose 5 pounds. That's it. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you have that program for that. When they actually accomplish that goal, they're going to go, what's next? And then you got to be thinking out your scaffold of what's next, what's the next scaffolding, and it will layer over time. And, but again, going back to the business thing, look at the business model too, and make sure that that makes sense to you. And it layers into the curriculum that you're building around it. So that would be my, from start to finish kind of tips I would give to get started.
That's absolutely perfect. And it goes very much in line with what we always say to any coach, is sell results, not your time. And what I mean by that specifically is that if you go to a golf coach's website, or honestly, any coach that we work with, typically it's sign up for X amount of hours of lessons or training. Here's my 10 pack of personal training. Who cares? Like, why am I even going to see you? Tell me why what I'm actually signing up for is to your point, Matt, lose weight, shoot better scores, run faster, jump higher, whatever it is. Tell me right away what the heck I'm signing up for so I can stand out. And if you are somebody here that's listening and you have the kind of the kernels or the seeds of a result-based program that you've been working on because of your specialty, whatever it might be, less three putts, let's say, if you're a golf coach, something like this, get your program built out with the naming convention in mind. Understanding the name can change. It definitely does. But if you kind of set that temple out there and work backwards, as Matt said, a lot of things will start to become very, very clear. So as we wrap up here, because we did hit our allotted time, I want to be respectful of everybody here. If you are new to Coach Now, you just saw this post out there in the world and you're brand new, as promised, I wanted to make sure that if you are interested in learning about what we do, that you can get hooked up a little bit with a discount on your first year. We've got codes that you can grab, program 20. You can apply that to our Plus or Pro memberships. You should start a trial if you haven't done so. These are all things that we can help you with. You can reach out to us and we'll navigate you through it. For you guys at Op36, it's pretty clear where to find you, but what would be the best kind of suggestion for somebody that looked at this? They are in the world of golf. We'll just make that clear because you guys aren't going to be helping all the baseball coaches just yet. Maybe someday we can work towards figuring this all out with everybody. What's the best way for them to reach out to you guys and learn more, explore the program, and potentially even implement it? Pass that to you, Ryan, I guess.
Yeah, I would say there's two avenues. One, if you enjoy talking to a person in person, go on our website and find a coach in your area, hang out with them, watch them teach, have lunch with them, see if they want to do. There's coaches everywhere. There's 800 and some coaches in 16 different countries, so you can find them in your area. We also have regional sales reps for Golf Genius that are in the domestic U.S., so you could reach out and connect with one of them. They'd be happy to stop by your club and do an in-person demo, or just go on op36.golf. I'm not sure what the buttons are now, Matt. Are they schedule a demo? They change so often, right, Spencer? The market. So Matt's a great resource on what button to click now.
Yeah, if you're a coach and you want to learn more, then you can click on the there's the Golf Pro section of the site, and it will, any of those forms come into us and our sales team, and they'll reach out and do demos, show the whole platform, help you plan a program before you even start, really get that first blueprint down. So that way, when you do sign up, it's as simple as building it in, setting your dates, launching it and going. And then for any golfers out there, just find your local program location. And we're excited that, you know, later this year we'll be into early next year, we'll be direct to consumer with the app to have some of these live for everybody to check out. So very, very much looking forward to that.
That's a massive shift out there, and you guys can learn more about that as it goes. But I think that's a huge deal and a big benefit for anybody, parents especially, that want to just get going if there's no local program to them. So as we wrap up, I never like to overpromise, but I do want to paint a little bit of a picture for you that of the folks that are still here. We don't have integrations with Operation 36 today. We don't have a clear roadmap of how it's going to look, but I can tell you our groups collectively are looking for ways to make everyone's lives easier and work together. So that hopefully leads to some technology stuff probably next year, where if you are running an Operation 36 program, Coach Now could hopefully augment some of that stuff for you. I think that would be kind of the way that it works, is that Operation 36 would be the hub for those programs, and we would just be there to support maybe some ongoing communication, some video analysis, stuff like that. Stay tuned. No promises of when, but just keep an eye out. Ryan, Matt, thank you guys for being here. I am stoked that we get to work together moving forward. And for those of you that attended, thanks for taking the time. For those of you watching the recording, please reach out to us or to the Op36 team if you have questions or want to learn more about either program or how to use them all together. So cheers, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Spencer. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Spencer.
See you guys soon. Bye.